Hey friends, welcome to the Uncommon Freedom Show. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Becca, and we're your hosts, here to help you reach your potential and maximize your impact in every area that matters. Let's get started. 2 weeks ago, we talked about how you can't do it all. Last week, we talked about saying no. This week, we're going to talk about saying yes to quote unquote doing it.
That's right, babe. One of our favorite topics is sex, and I always like to joke that I get to sleep with the hot boss and the HR department doesn't care. But even though we're teasing people this episode with the idea that sex is best when you aren't in debt, which is absolutely true, what we're really talking about is how life is so much better when you don't have debt. We're pulling from my soon-to-be-released book entitled The 7 Disciplines of Uncommon Freedom. Specifically, we're going to be talking about Discipline 2 from Chapter 4, which is Master Yourself, Master Your Wealth, kind of like Master of Your Domain from Seinfeld, right?
Clever title.
Stay with us to the end, though, to get to our top 5 list of books, which helped us become multimillionaires by the time we were 40 years old.
Yeah.
All right.
Finances, or the lack thereof, is a leading stressor in marriage. I think many people are aware of that. So more money doesn't guarantee less stress if you don't have good habits. And many times more money means your problems have more zeros behind them. So we talk about, you can be broke at a higher level, or more money. What's the saying? More money, more problems.
Yep.
But everything is better when you own it. Vacations are better when you don't have to pay them off after. Cars are more enjoyable when you own them. And to your credit, sex is better when you own the bed and you don't have to worry about the repo man stealing it out from under you.
Absolutely. Bottom line is, folks, when you go on a vacation and you're stuck having to pay the bills for it, other than paying off the credit card, but if you're not going to be able to pay that credit card off, if you're going to be making interest payments on a vacation, number one, that vacation is costing you way more than you thought it was.
Right.
But number two, it just decreases from the enjoyment that you can have. Everything is better when it's paid for, when you don't have debt. So we just really want to encourage you. The house is more enjoyable. Like Dave Ramsey says, the grass under your feet feels better when you own the grass and you've paid off the mortgage.
Yeah,
that's why he talks about having a barefoot backyard barbecue when you pay off your mortgage. And let's face it, if you're renting your bed from Rent-A-Center,
people really do that?
Yes, they do.
When I was a police officer,
you would be shocked.
That's really gross.
People can rent just about everything.
Ooh, that's sketchy.
I mean, I've even seen there's these clothing services where you're basically, have you ever looked into these clothing, like wardrobe type services where they
deliver but I'm sure they clean stuff in between people.
I'm sure.
But I don't do that. No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't. That is just way too personal and.
But I know people that do, and it rents a runway, and it works out great.
Okay,
but I'm sure they clean everything in between.
They're not renting underwear, are they?
I don't think so.
I hope not.
I mean, the only people that wear underwear on the runway are the models at those sleazy shows. So average people are, if you can't afford your underwear, we need to have a different discussion.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I gotta agree. All right, so what we want to encourage you folks, and this is something that we really had to do, is to get over your poverty-minded concepts of money. We were guilty of this for many years.
Yes.
I think a lot of it has to do with how you're raised, and we're not blaming our parents. It's kind of how our parents were raised by their grandparents. And it's something that probably goes back at least to the Depression in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But poverty mindset, so we're going to talk about some things that are an abundance mindset when it comes to money. So the first thing is money makes you more of who you already are. So a lot of times,
quite an epiphany when we heard that.
Yes.
But it made a lot of sense.
But you'll hear people criticize, oh, so-and-so became such a jerk, when they, won the lottery. Well, that's because they were a jerk before they won the lottery.
Quite likely.
So-and-so, whatever criticisms you hear of people, what we found and what we've heard a lot of other people agree with is that money just makes you more of who you are. If you're a generous person with a little bit of money, you're going to be a generous with a lot more money. If you're a tightwad with a little bit of money, you're going to be a tightwad with a lot of money, which actually isn't necessarily as bad of a thing. But if you're a spender with a little, and if you're in debt all the time with a little bit of money, you're going to be
broke at a higher level.
In fact, you're probably better off not having the money, because the debt that you're going to accrue at a lower net worth is a lot less than what people accrue at a higher net worth.
Less damage. Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. So the other thing is that money is amoral, right? Money, you know, there's the Pink Floyd song Money, which is a great song. But they got the Bible a little bit wrong, which isn't really surprising. It's not money is the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all
evil. Did you hear that, Pink Floyd?
Yes. Well,
if you're listening to our podcast,
yeah,
they're not likely to, but
not likely.
If so, we wanted to give you a little course correction there. Correct.
It can be used, bottom line is money can be used for good or evil, right? It's all about the user. We had a good life without money. We have a better, more enjoyable life with it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So money gives you options. And this is something we have seen so much in the last, you know, 10 to 12 years, and just for ourselves and then many of the people that we work with and do life with. But the best education and environment for your kids, the right healthcare versus what your insurance plan covers. And money is really good at helping you create memories. Some of our best experiences as family are memories that we go back to on a regular basis, were the trips that we took with our kids, and many of them cost money. Now, we started out small. I think we did camping trips and things that
paid $2,500 for
cost money to have an investment, but a small amount of money. And we built on those memories. But being able to travel, go places, get away from it all, and do it in comfort, you know, so there's just less headaches when you can do something in comfort. Those have created some really awesome lasting memories for us.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about options. We talk about margin. I remember when we took that trip with the boys, that train trip, we took the train up to Tacoma, Washington. I think there was a motocross show, motocross show up there, and took the older boys. Dylan was younger. And I know we still have lots of pictures from that. It was a good family time.
Yeah.
And I remember we checked in. You know, it was you and me, three boys. We checked into a hotel room that had two queen beds, and we looked at each other like, "This
How
is
are
gonna
we
going to
get any sleep?"
No,
because they were little. I mean, they were probably 7 and under. Or something.
Yeah, maybe 8 and under. So, you know, 8, 6, and 5, something like that.
And listen, if you've ever had young boys, elementary age, they have a lot of energy. And honestly, the bigger and older they get, the more they screw around, and you know, with just bigger bodies and smaller brains.
And you and I mean, we didn't go on lots of vacations, but I stayed at a handful of hotels with my parents growing up, and we were a family of six.
One hotel room,
guessing. Packing the sleeping mat.
Sleeping on the floor.
And six of us, one hotel room, one bathroom. Yeah. It can be done. And we know that third world people live in houses that big. But boy, if you don't have to live like that, it's a lot better to not. And I remember we checked into that hotel room. It was like a Holiday Inn Express.
I don't even know how you guys could last with one bathroom, with as much as boys go to the bathroom.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's tough.
Girls primp, but boys go to the bathroom, and they're in there a long time.
Yes. So we checked into this hotel, and we like, let's go get a second room. And that was like,
oh, I don't even remember that.
Like, I remember and it was a big step.
Taste of freedom.
I was probably the first Tinter / McBrayer to ever, you know, have two rooms for the family. Like realistically, I bet my grandparents probably didn't do it. It would just, you know, I'm sure that your parents didn't
probably
do it.
Didn't do it. Yeah. We didn't go on a lot of vacations to hotels.
Yeah. But it was a game changer to just have some margin in our budget to be able to have a second room. And really it added so much to the quality of enjoyment that we had on that trip. The other thing that we've had a lot of conversations, we've been there, but I think when it's easy to settle when things are okay, but when you hit a crisis is when you realize, boy, I really wish I had more margin.
Right.
And we were there when I had my back injury in 2007. We couldn't afford, we didn't have options. And we've had so many conversations with people with whether it's, you know, healthcare is very common where it's like, well, my insurance, I want to go to this counselor, my insurance only, you know, they're out of network. I want to go to this dentist. The one I go to is an absolute, you know, cold jerk and he's not good with kids. Well, the one you want to go see is out of network.
Right.
And it is such a blessing to be in a spot where you just pay for the care you need. If insurance covers it, great. But let's face it, a lot of, you know, we're all about holistic natural options as well. And most of that isn't covered.
Right.
And having the option to do that is a huge blessing. So we just want to encourage you folks, like get out there, create the margin, do the side hustle, whatever it takes so that when bad things happen, because most likely they will, you're not stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Exactly. So we want to go over the four steps towards uncommon financial freedom. And they're simple, but not easy. So step one is to get out of debt. No debt except your mortgage, ideally 25% or less of your income.
Yeah. So debt is a bad thing. I would recommend like Dave Ramsey. You're going to hear me talk about him a lot.
Time out. We got to plug this because it's just so cool. So if you are listening to this, very soon, Kevin Tinter is going to be on the Entree Leadership Podcast with Dave Ramsey.
Just as a call-in guest.
In December, and we don't know when it'll be aired.
I don't know
when it'll be aired. But at some point, that will exist, which is just pretty cool. So,
pretty excited about that, yeah. Yes. But Dave Ramsey talks about the fact, you know, the problem with debt is that it's like a snake. And if you play with snakes long enough, you're going to get bit. So there's a lot of people who are able to use other people's money.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, billionaires that mortgage things. But I think for the average human, the average American, it's a risky way to do things, is to leverage things, to invest, and to try and make money. The bottom line is, if you don't have debt, you can't get bit by that snake. So, you know, the debt tends to assume that things will stay the same or improve, right? I remember hearing about these people buying, you know, $600,000 townhomes in California when I lived there in 2004. And, you know, they're not putting any down payment or minimal down payment. They're right. doing interest only loans, and then they're flipping them 2 years later, making money until they're not. And that's the risk, is that debt just assumes that, that things are going to either stay the same or go up until you have some type of crisis. And then that's when you end up getting evicted, having to do short sales, which can haunt you for years, if not decades. So
absolutely. So under the getting out of debt, step one, the other thing besides just assuming that debt is not going to be good for you is to build up an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of expenses. And you can do this little by little. The compound effect is real. But what we find is when people don't store up in the good season, they struggle in the lean seasons,
yeah.
You know, and I mean, this is biblical. You think about Joseph and how he, you know, used God's wisdom based on the dreams that he had to, you know, lead that household, lead that country by storing up during the profitable seasons. And then when the famine came, they were prepared. And a lot of people are in a famine right now, financially, with the job market, with the economy, with the cost of goods right now. And unfortunately, many people have debt, and then they also have not created an emergency fund.
Yeah. So when it comes to your emergency fund, get to $1,000. I mean, set aside $50 a month, $100 a month, $200 a month, get it to 1,000, then get it to 5,000 or 10,000. I mean, we were not making a lot of money when we had a $10,000 emergency fund, but I'm sure the statistics on how many people have a $10,000 emergency fund it's a very small percentage. And then right. we built from there. So, and the other thing is, I would encourage everyone, every time you get a raise, increase your emergency fund. You will never regret having a bigger emergency fund than you need.
Absolutely.
And then the other reminder here is Dave Ramsey says that your income is your biggest wealth creation tool, especially when you aren't in debt. So, you know, if you're a teacher or a police officer or a fireman, and you've been a great steward and you don't have debt, that's great. But this is why we talk about a side hustle, a business, or doing something else, because it's very difficult to build wealth if you're only making $60,000 or $80,000 or even $100,000 a year. If you can increase your income significantly, you know, go from $100,000 to $200,000 because of some type of side business, that will really accelerate your wealth building. And wealth, the reason to build wealth is so you have more options, you have more margin, and also so that you can have more fun with it, but also bless others with
it. Be more generous. Yep. Yeah. So step two is to get rid of what you cannot afford. Oh my goodness. The number of people that we have talked to who are in financial debt and struggling, but they have car payments and they own things that they don't have the money for. So if you wouldn't finance to rent something, don't finance to buy it. You want to go on that anymore?
I learned that from a great conversation I had with my friend, high school friend, Chris Connell.
Yeah.
And we were considering a large purchase several years ago. And the only way to do it was going to be to finance it.
Yep.
And it was something that we could rent or charter. And he simply asked me, he's like, would you finance it to charter it? And my answer was an instant obvious no. He's like, if you wouldn't finance it to charter it, then why would you finance it to buy it? I was like, bam, all of a sudden had tremendous clarity, even though there's all kinds of brokers and other people, you know, internet gurus saying finance it, blah, 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 tax write-offs, this and that, and this and that. Yeah. And when he asked me that question, it was like a light bolt of clarity. Lightning bolt of clarity. Mm. And instantly it was like, duh, that's the correct decision. And we are so glad that we made the decision.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. Step three, use cash and track your spending. So a lot of people are resistant to a budget, but a budget is merely deciding where your money will go ahead of time. It sounds restrictive, but really, if you think about it, it's actually kind of mapping out your finances, just like you would if you're going on a long trip.
Right.
Map it out. Don't just leave it up to chance. So it, what it really should do, it should increase your feelings of freedom because it allows you to prioritize what's most important as well as what's essential. It's really like scheduling your rocks in your calendar. You know, so we talked about this just recently.
Right.
You know, if going on a date is important, if having dates with our kids, spending time with that is important, we take three trips a year at least. We get those in the calendar. That is what a budget really is. It's like putting those rocks in. There's always ways to spend the money. There's always ways to blow the money.
Right.
But if you don't prioritize savings, retirement, saving extra for health, the mortgage and things like that, that's where you're going to end up in trouble.
And if you want something to improve, you have to track it. So, you know, we've talked a lot about this when we've talked about physical health, nutrition, fitness, things like that, sleep. But it's very true with our finances as well.
So do you remember like the fact that tracking everything works to improve it?
Yes. Are you asking me that for a specific reason? You have a very accusatory tone.
So going back to the title of this, do you remember that we actually tracked how many times we had sex 1 year?
We did that one time.
We did.
I don't even remember what the number was. Do we even want to tell the...
I do.
Maybe we won't tell the... It was a lot.
It was 2005.
Oh my gosh. You remember the year and everything?
I do. I'm good with numbers and
dates. We lived in Okinawa, Japan. I'm sure of that.
No kids.
I thought it was ridiculous because we kept a little note card and a tally sheet.
Yes, we did. We did. And but
why did we do that? I mean, was it just for bragging rights for you?
For fun. Okay. But hey, God created marriage. God created sex. If you read the Song of Psalms, he's all about it. Be fruitful and multiply. Yep. So we are just getting all practiced up for the three kids in 4 years that we would have.
That was cutting our sex back a little bit.
But,
it was the year of
2005. We were apart because I was still in the Marine Corps and I had several different deployments. We were apart for 3 months out of that year and we still had sex 166 times. So
I can't believe you just shared that.
I did.
On air.
I did. Because
I'm blushing on the video version of this.
Healthy married sex.
Yes.
Back for God.
Preach.
Right?
Yep.
So, but bottom line is we tracked it.
Hey friends, here's a quick reminder that if you're finding value in this show, would you do us a favor and subscribe, share with someone you think would benefit, and give us a 5-star rating. We make nothing from this show and invest a lot of time and money producing it. All we ask is that you help us get our message to more people.
That's why we keep trying to tell our kids, it is worth waiting until you find someone and get married, people. It is so much better. And I'll just tell you, it gets better as you age.
What are your thoughts on public accountability?
No.
Okay.
Nice try. No, we're not going to create a tracker on the website for people to track their stuff. I don't want to know when everyone else listening to this is having sex. Sorry, we wish you the best. Please do not share those details with us. Okay, so let's see, what else we got here? Oh, cash is great because you can't spend what you don't have. It's so funny when I pull out cash, I think it's so rare. People like, especially the younger generation, they do not know how to make change.
Yeah.
People, let's help our children learn how to make change. It's so pathetic. Even when the actual register tells them the amount of money, it's like they don't even know how to count it. I'm just thinking to myself, have we lost all sense of practicality? But yeah, we like to pay with cash. And the biggest thing is because you can track it.
Yep. Actually, I mean,
you can, and the government can't.
Yeah.
So there we go. We'll leave it at that.
Pros and cons. The other thing is we're not staunch anti-credit card people. We use a lot of cash. We use credit cards quite a bit. I think, and we get massive reward checks. And so there's definitely some benefits. Statistically, they say that you're going to spend about 8% more if you, and you can fact check me on that. That's fine. You spend about 8% more if you're using a credit card or debit card.
I will be fact checking.
Bottom line is we're going to spend what we're going to spend, and we get, you know, literally thousands of dollars worth of rewards checks. The one thing I just like to point out to people is if you own a business, never use your rewards, whether it's miles or trips or cash, for business expenses because you lost the write-off.
Yep.
Always cash in that check. Use it for personal stuff. Go have some fun with it. Buy some guitars with it or something like that. But bottom line is if you can't pay it off, if you make a single interest payment, get rid of that credit card.
Exactly. And if you are not disciplined and do not have the finances to use credit cards, then use debit cards. You know, for the same convenience, use a debit card where when the money is gone, the spending stops.
Yep. And that's what our kids are doing.
Yes.
And they frequently run it down to
learning along the way.
Yep.
Some of them are bombing it. But
the bottom line is make mistakes when you're a kid.
When you're 12 to 15 to 16, like make those mistakes at home where we can work through that. Yeah. Because once you get charged some of those overcharge fees, it is painful.
It's a wake up call.
You already don't have a lot of money. All right. Let's move on to step four. Leverage your time instead of trading time for money. So we've already talked about this a little bit, but delegate tasks that you don't like if you can for less than you earn. And you can work extra to make money. So if you make $50 an hour and you can pay someone to clean your house for $20 an hour, work an extra 5 hours and you make an extra $150 and you come home to a clean house. This was a game changer for us when I finally said, hey, I want to pay someone to clean, like deep clean the house once a month is how we started. And there was someone that we knew that, you know, $12 an hour and she would come for 2 hours. And she would just clean the toilets and do like the deep cleaning stuff. And that's how we started having housekeeping all the way to now. We have weekly housekeeping and we have for years. And but with that and in parenting our kids so that we don't raise spoiled brats, our children clean their own rooms. They have weekly chores. And so the housekeepers are for us, not for our children.
100%. The other thing is when it comes to leveraging your time, remember that owning toys can be expensive. Consider renting or memberships if you can afford them. I recently talked to a friend a couple months ago who's got a membership with Polaris or something like that. So he has access to like razors and side-by-sides and four-wheelers and stuff. But he doesn't have to trailer them. He doesn't have to maintain them. You know, theoretically, is it maybe a more expensive way to go? I don't know. Like we joined a boat club this year. We sold our boat. We were able to have unlimited access to a boat that we used twice this summer for less than half of what we were paying just to have a slip. So just think outside the box. And the great thing is we had no maintenance, no hassle, no mess, no fuss. I mean, it really is a much better way to do a lot of things.
All right, talk about tools. This is not my department and I don't normally take care of the outside of the house, not because I can't, just because that was always your department before, a little bit of our roles, you know, inside, outside. So
yeah,
what do you mean by this?
I think there's a delicate balance between, you know, having some basic skill sets. I mean, I think every man should be able to swing a hammer and
woman,
you know,
woman could swing a hammer too.
True. But if she's got a good husband,
if she doesn't want to break a nail,
I mean, let's face it.
I don't want to break
a hammer properly.
Sometimes.
Not normally.
50%.
We've built houses in Mexico. Okay.
Okay. Well,
you stick to painting.
I don't even do painting well.
Well, there's lots of women who are great with
it. I'm also okay not being good at some of these things. Maybe that's my problem is I don't really want to be good at them.
There you go.
But some women are really good with this.
I believe that every boy, every man should be able to swing a hammer and change a tire and change the oil.
But people should know the difference in screwdrivers because I know that.
I totally agree.
Yeah. And you should know how to change light bulbs and... What was the other thing we taught the kids? Sew a button. That's more of a life skill.
Absolutely.
Write a check, even though they're pretty much outdated, but you probably still need to know that. Write a check, balance your budget or checkbook. That's old school.
That is old school. So when it comes to tools, I understand the drive to do it yourself. My dad did everything himself. I think your dad did a lot of stuff.
You know,
it's how our parents raised, but we had this epiphany I did when we lived in Okinawa.
This was yours,
and saw that number one, they lived in much smaller apartments than we were used to. And they didn't have garages. They didn't have storage sheds. They really didn't have tools. I mean, they had a very basic toolkit, and that was because they paid the plumber, the electrician, the carpenter to do everything that they needed to be done. The tradesmen had all the tools they needed for the job. And what that did is it kept us from having to spend money. Like when, like if I get it, honestly, a tool as a gift to me is like giving you a vacuum or a pan. It's not a gift. It just means like, oh, great. Now I have my own thing to do work with. It's not enjoyable. And I realize some people do enjoy that. But to me, tools are something you typically use to do work. And there's other things I'd rather do.
Cancel the power saw.
So the great concept was just like, wow, pay a pro who's really good at it. This way, I don't have to manage it. I don't have to go get a storage shed, organize it. You know, I have basic tools. There's a lot of people with more than me, but I pay the pro and then I don't have to deal with the hassle. And I also don't have to deal with the liability of fixing it. So it's now, just
people listening might say, we don't have the money to pay pros for everything. Like
you, 100%.
You people or like yes. Other people.
Yeah.
What would you say to that?
Well, I would say start where you can, because we also did a lot of things ourselves. We painted the first house we bought. We painted it inside and out. Oh, we did it.
We were sure.
I mean, you were on second story ladders when we were pregnant. I don't even know if we knew it yet. But we did everything. So, and then we did the first sprinkler system. We've talked about this a little bit.
Oh yeah, there'll be a picture disaster. In the book about that.
And we learned, okay, this is not worth it. You can find someone to do it.
Yeah.
Go work extra. This is where we go back to the delegating and go work overtime, pay someone else what you make or less. Mm-hmm. And you're still putting money in the bank and you come home to a job that's complete. So we know that you're not going to be able to pay people to do everything. But if you're looking at doing something that requires an expensive tool, then that might be the job that you say, huh, instead of me going and buying this, unless you can buy it and then sell it, buy it used and sell it after you're done with the job, pay someone else to do it.
We know people that own multiples of the same tool.
We do. There's
those
a lot
people
of people
are very handy.
There's a lot of
but
people.
But that's a lot of tools that they store.
Multiples. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, they're poor spouses.
All right,
you take the next one.
Get into the business quadrant. So great book that is on our list is the Cashflow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki. But he really just talks about the fact that having some way to generate income with a business where you can leverage tax write-offs is a huge way to get ahead financially. So,
but not necessarily to go into debt to do this type of a
job. Correct. Yeah. Spending, taking out a $300,000 small business loan so you can open up a restaurant that is likely to close in 2 to 3 years is not what we're talking about. It's a great book, but just understand, we're not accountants here, but there's tons of advantages financially if you can leverage the legal tax deductions that are out there for businesses. And so that's just something to be thinking about and looking into. And if you read that book, that will give you some great guidance.
Yes. So then we want to talk about giving generously. So we started by tithing 10% of our income and sponsoring a child through Compassion International when we were newlyweds. And in college, we were, in college living on love, also living on some school debt. Both working hard, and we still decided to tithe early on and do a Compassion Child. $25 a month, which would be nothing now, was a lot to us back then.
Yeah,
but we just felt like we wanted to do something beyond our tithe to really contribute to society.
I mean, I think our blow budgets were about, at best, $25 a month each.
Yeah, it was barely a pedicure or anything like that.
It's kind of like a
month at a time.
Every other month.
Yeah.
For me, if I saved up my money for 3 years, I could buy a
gun.
And
I got pedicures every month.
So. Yeah.
Yes.
And, I think you mentioned our school debt. We did end up taking out some loans. It was something we actually sought counseling for because we were I was against
debt
the
averse.
Debt.
Yeah. Yes.
And ultimately, the guidance we got is, listen, you two are driven towards very specific careers that will allow you to pay off the amount of debt that we were taking out very quickly. And the commitment we made was we would live off of my income and use 100% of your income to pay off that debt. So we had, from the time that we had to start making payments, we were paid off in 1 year. So we don't want to come across as hypocrites or anything like that to people.
No, we don't have it all figured out. We're just telling you some of the journey that we've taken.
And in all honesty, that was the right decision for us. At the time, I don't regret it, but it
might've taken us 10 years to get through school if we'd done it a different way.
It could have. And time is enough. Well, time is a huge asset. So anyways, all right. So this year we are tithing. So we started at 10% back in, 25 years ago.
Yes.
And this year we're actually tithing roughly 50% of our gross. So that was something we started small. We've increased it every year for the last about 7 years, and we're super blessed. But we wouldn't have gotten to where we're at if we didn't start small. And I remember hearing stories about people living on, you know, they're very wealthy, living on 5% of their income, and I remember saying, "I want that to be me."
Mm-hmm.
So it is really fun. As much fun as it is to spend money on things that you enjoy,
yeah,
and to take trips that are memorable and a lot of fun, it is also really fun.
Like radically fun. I think it's Jody Gelly who calls it radical generosity. Is that what she calls it?
Generosity? I think it's Dave Ramsey talks about ridiculous generosity.
Yeah. And this isn't to pat ourselves on the back, guys. We're just really trying to awaken everyone to what is possible when you create enough income to not only live on, but then to give in radical ways. And it's just really fun.
When you can see a need,
yeah,
you know, that's a significant,
a tangible need.
Yeah. And significant, not just pick up the meal. I mean, this is awesome if you pick up the meal for
start
the person
somewhere
behind you.
Please start somewhere.
You know, at In-N-Out. But we're talking about you see a significant need and you just cover it.
Right.
You just take care of it. Or you hear of a ministry that needs to fund something and you don't contribute to it, you cover the cost of it. It is, mm-hmm. you know, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Like we've experienced that and we really want all of you to experience it.
Well. One of our favorite things is the last couple of years for Christmas, we've taken foster group home kids shopping and just literally said, whatever you want. Like we're going to be at the mall for a few hours. It's literally like, we hate going to the mall at Christmas time, but we love doing this and just letting them buy clothes, shoes, bedding, whatever their needs are, whatever the foster home says that they are allowed to have, basically we fill their needs and we don't even give them a budget. We just let them go.
Yeah.
And it's just, we don't do this with our kids. We've never done this with our children.
They buy things that our kids are like, you're going to let them buy that?
And yeah.
Like, yes,
brand new pair of really nice, expensive ton of shoes. And it's like, absolutely. This is their one pair of shoes they get to buy. They can pick out whatever pair they want. And it's just been really, really fun to just spoil these kids that have a really hard home life. So.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right. So last thing is our list, our top five books that helped us become multimillionaires by the time we were 40. So once again, this is not a get rich quick talk here, folks. We are not overnight millionaires. Basically, it took us 19 years to become overnight millionaires. You know, just like it took me 25 years to become an overnight success. But at the very top is The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. Beck, do you want to take number two?
Yep. The Automatic Millionaire by, is it David Bach?
David Bach.
His last name?
Yep. And for the record, folks, I'm the financial guru in the family. So Becca
I will
has
fully admit that I have not
read some of these.
Yes. But, I have not read all of these.
Yeah. Rich Dad's Cashflow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki.
Deduct Everything by Eva Rosenberg.
And Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill and Rosalie Bland. That's a famous, legendary, you know,
definitely
old book.
To that
it's
one.
A classic. It's a great book. It talks about the mindset.
50% of these are making my eyes roll back in my head. So I just want you to know, if you're not the financial person in your family, if someone is, perfect, but if you are by yourself or you, neither of you are, financially motivated or interested in financial education, do it anyway. I just get to be lazy in this department and let Kevin take it because he likes it and he's good at it. And I take other areas of our life, but yeah.
All right, everyone. So as a quick recap, get a healthy mindset about money. Money isn't bad. It only makes you more of who you are. So if you don't like who you are right now, get that figured out before you build wealth.
Oh, good.
Yep. Get out of debt. Get out of debt. No more financing your cars. No more financing your furniture. No, your mortgage. Okay. As long as it's 25% or less, but please folks, stop making interest payments on stupid stuff.
No more immediate gratification.
Yep.
Like allow yourself that delayed gratification.
Yep. Get rid of what you can't afford. If you can't afford that boat, that car, whatever it is, it's okay. Paid for used is a great thing. Use cash and track your spending and learn to leverage your time instead of trading hours for dollars. That's a huge thing. And then give generously. Please do not think that you're going to be a super generous person when you're a millionaire if you are not a generous person right now.
Mm, absolutely. How you do one thing is how you do most things.
Bam.
And that is something we have seen in life so often. I'm sure it's true about us as well. But again, how we do most things is how we do one thing is how we do most things. So it just means that you generally have habit tracks in your life that you follow. And so if you think you're just going to be drastically different when you have a lot of money, it's quite unlikely.
Yep. All right, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. If you want to make a commitment to tracking how many times you're going to have sex with your spouse.
No, please do not.
This year.
Make a commitment. Don't share.
Make a commitment. And share with us at the end of 2024. And because we want to reclaim sex for the way that God intended it, right?
Okay.
But leave us a comment about what area you need to focus on financially the most. And then remember, my first book, The 7 Disciplines of Uncommon Freedom, is our blueprint for success and will be available on Amazon and Audible on November 7th. By the way, just finished recording the Audible version this week. It was a ton of fun. I hear some people hate doing it, but I actually really enjoyed it. And we will be highlighting more topics from the book over the coming weeks. So make sure you subscribe to this podcast to ensure that you never miss an episode. See you next week.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Uncommon Freedom Show. We believe freedom isn't man's invention. It was created by God. If you are enjoying the show, please give us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to us on. Then subscribe and share with friends and family that you think will enjoy the show. You can connect with us at beckandkev.com for more resources to learn biblical principles, essential disciplines, and the winning habits that help once average people lead the life they want instead of accepting the life they were given.